It's 8:30, and we have with us live in the studios once again, John Parrish and Maria Tomchik, co-editors at Eat the Steak. Good morning to you both.
Good morning. Coming to you live from our safe haven in Vancouver, B.C.
I'm
not hearing Maria.
Yeah, I'm not hearing you either. No. Hang on. Okay.
There's it on.
Much better.
Okay, that's good.
We had the red filter on.
Yes, I am wearing red today.
So, happy post-election blues.
Yeah, it was splendid. It was truly splendid.
Yeah.
It was, did you, any gauge of, like, the percentages of how much you voted for that didn't come through? Or, I mean, I had a pretty low batting average this time.
I did pretty well, except for president.
I think I did pretty well, too. Except for the president.
Well, I think probably most of the people listening did pretty well, except for the president.
Yeah.
So, well, let's...
go ahead.
I was going to say, let's talk about this in a little more detail. That stuff locally that turned out pretty well.
Yeah, the Democrats have a really razor-thin majority, similar to the Republicans nationally. You have Christine Gregoire, who's up by about 4,000 votes now, but the rest of the ballots to be counted are primarily from King County, which is heavily Democratic, so that'll probably be a wider margin by the time it's all said and done. And the Democrats now have control of both houses in the legislature in Olympia. Slim majority in both, and a huge deficit staring them in the face that they're going to have to deal with.
So there's really no excuse for them to yet again cut social services, but we know where that's what's going to happen, happen.
And particularly because Christine Gregoire has said that it's similar to Gary Locke, that's going to be part of her approach. So,
yeah, she has mentioned closing loopholes, corporate tax loopholes. However, I don't think that's going to really happen.
Yeah.
Because in the same breath, she would usually say and stimulating the economy and promoting jobs in the state, et cetera, which is code word for don't take my first sentence seriously.
Yeah, it very much is, and particularly once she starts tallying how many of those corporate donors she's going to need to hang on to a second term. Mm-hmm. It really is a system of bribery when it comes right down to it, and that's why many of these corporate loopholes remain unclosed even after we have year after year of these huge budget deficits.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly why they call them loopholes. I mean, it sounds like, you know, it was just a big friggin' mistake or something, you know, when it seems like this thing's designed that way from the get-go, but...
Yeah. One of the races, particularly on the state level, that I voted in that didn't turn out the way I wanted it to was the attorney general's race. Rob McKenna beat out Deborah Senn in an illustration of how $2+ million of money from federal organizations that represent business industries like the insurance companies, et cetera, can come into a state and heavily influence an election. Yeah. Deborah Senn just couldn't counter those attack ads.
Yeah. And another race where it didn't turn out the way you might have wanted to was superintendent of public lands, where Mike Cooper lost out to Chainsaw Sutherland.
Yeah.
That was unfortunate. But otherwise, it did pretty well this year.
And how about the initiatives?
Hanford was a big winner. That was
the big winner, won by a mile.
It tells you once again that people don't particularly like nuclear waste in their backyards, which should be a no-brainer, but isn't necessarily, particularly when you start talking to people at the Department of Energy. That will now head toward the courts to see.
And then, unfortunately, because we don't have Deborah Senn as Attorney General, it might be a little hard for the state to push on this kind of a thing, because it's really the Attorney General who sets the fire going on this kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's very true.
Now, the other big winner in the initiatives was the advisory measure one, the question that was asked that everybody kind of scratched their head and said, why is this on the ballot? This question that was asked, you know, do you want to spend money on a measure to fund transportation, and what kind of a tax would you want to pay? Now, the vast majority of people voted yes, that we do need money for transportation, and it's an issue that needs attention. But the public really split out almost evenly over the options available on the ballot for how to raise the money for transportation in the Tri-County area of King, Snohomish, and Pierce County. Now, the one that did kind of win out was a bare 25 to 26% of people voting for the auto excise tax, which is kind of ironic, given that that was the first Tim Iman tax-cutting measure that passed, was cutting the auto excise tax down and taking away all that money for road construction, et cetera. But the other options on the ballot each got respectable numbers of votes as well. So it really kind of left me at least with the feeling of, why did they even put this thing on the ballot, since it told the people on the Tri-County Commission exactly what they already knew, what they were already thinking and discussing in their meetings. Yes, we need the money for road construction and repair and transit. No, we don't really know how to raise the funds, you know, because everybody wants a different tax for it.
Yeah, and speaking of transit, the monorail was a big winner this time around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the monorail recall went down to a ringing, resounding defeat. It's interesting that the folks who actually launched that recall initiative are saying, well, we will keep trying. I think that's a mistake on their part.
Yeah, that's a huge mistake, because clearly, I mean, the last three times the monorail has been on the ballot, it won by not large majorities. This is by far the biggest vote total the monorail has gotten in all its ballot attempts. A good percentage of that vote, I think, was coming from the argument that I was making before the election, that even if you have qualms about the monorail and you think that there are things about it that need changing, you don't want to pull the plug at this point. You don't want to have Seattle having the reputation of being unable to complete capital projects. You want it to go forward at this point.
Yeah, and that there are other ways, other ways to make changes to the monorail at this point than just saying, let's stop it altogether.
Yeah, and I think also strategically the recall folks made a huge strategic error by emphasizing, well, we'll just switch the money over to Sound Transit, because the logical question that follows from that is, well, can they do that? And the answer is, well, really, no, they can't.
Right.
You know, it was really a kind of a non sequitur, and I think a lot of people saw through that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people also said, well, Sound Transit is a totally different area, the city and Sound Transit, if the monorail, you know.
And it's regional as opposed to citywide.
Yeah, it's regional, and it doesn't even really do what the planners had initially said. So why would you take the money away from the monorail, which is actually doing more or less what the planners said? It's going to take people from one part of the city to another part of the city that was in the original initiative. You know, it looks something like the original initiative. Sound Transit doesn't even look like the original route. I mean, it's not even going to SeaTac. So, I mean, a lot of people were looking at that saying, we even like the monorail better than we like Sound Transit,
yeah.
You know, for those reasons. Some of the other initiatives that were on the ballot, the top two primary passed, which is kind of interesting
Which means we're headed toward conventions.
Yes, which
we're
means...
We're not going to have primaries in the future.
Yeah, which means that the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are simply going to say, no, sorry, we're not going to do the primary voting route. We're going to hold state conventions, and that's how we're going to choose our candidates. So I think really what it did was folks just voted primaries off the off the agenda
from
now on.
Out of existence.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. That is, unless something else comes along to replace the top two primary. We'll have to see. Now, the other initiatives on the ballot, I-884, the education tax, was pretty soundly defeated as well. I think folks basically were voting on the bad idea of a sales tax to fund something like education. People are looking at the sales tax and saying that is probably the most regressive thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
No.
And Tim Iman went down, too.
Yes, and that was a very good thing, and I think very interesting as well. People said no to his gambling initiative, I-892. Referendum 55, charter schools, was defeated pretty resoundingly as well.
Once again, this is like, what, the fourth time charter schools
have
gone down?
Please, don't make us vote on it again.
Yeah. And like the monorail, I mean, the backers are pledging that they'll be back, but I really hope that finally the message is going to sink in that this is something that the voters simply don't want.
Yeah, stop spending money on this. And then the county charter amendment 1A and 1B to reduce the county council to 9 members from 13 passed, and it looks like it'll be happening sooner rather than later.
Well, and bouncing back to the referendum on charter schools, that was brought about because the legislature, again, overrode what people had voted for before and needed to have their hands slapped. So.
It was special interest groups at the legislature, pretty much businesses that would like to see privatization of the schools.
Yeah, Paul Allen, for example.
Yeah, and other Microsoft donors went in and said, and there were other businesses as well, went in and threw a bunch of money around in the legislature and said, pass this, and they did. Fortunately, it had to also go to and be approved by a popular vote, and that didn't happen.
All right, well, jump into results for the national elections.
Yeah, we've been kind of avoiding that, haven't we?
There's a large part of the country, at least if you believe the graphics that you see on the TV, is seeing red.
Yes and no. It's pretty evenly split, actually, between you have the Northeast and the Upper Midwest and the West Coast voting Democratic, and you have the rest of the country voting Republican.
Population-wise, it's a pretty even split.
Yeah, right. Population-wise, it's an even split. The big difference this year, of course, was that Bush had a popular margin of about 3 million votes, which is kind of discouraging news for people who wanted to see Kerry win. He did not do as well as Al Gore did 4 years ago. I think there are a number of reasons for that. He was, I think probably his attempt to be too militaristic was backfired on him in the end because, you really don't. You're not likely to vote for the copy rather than the original. And if you want somebody who's going to be tough and militaristic and not look for a way out of Iraq, then you're probably going to vote for George Bush in the first place.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that, too. I would also like to say, too, I'm pretty disappointed in the media for repeating the Bush administration's propaganda that George Bush now has a mandate. He has a split country. And he also has a problem in the Senate in particular, even though that there is a Republican majority now in both the House and Senate. In the Senate, it's only 55 members of the Senate are Republican. They need 60 to overturn filibusters. So the Democrats still have the tool of filibuster. However,
if they use it, they didn't use it in the first 4 years very much.
Well,
at
they,
all.
They used it
they
to
used
block
it for judgeships.
Yeah, they used it to block a lot of judicial appointments, which again is going to be an issue with this next 4 year term. The religious right in particular, that's their main cause with the Bush administration, is they're going to be trying to push these really conservative judicial nominations in the Senate.
And bear in mind, I mean, the Clinton administration for 8 years had relatively conservative judicial appointments. You had Reagan and Bush before that. So what we're looking at now is an entire generation of conservative judicial appointments. That's
who are
going
not
to,
conservative enough for the far right.
that's going to wind up taking its toll. It already has to some degree, but even more so over the next 4 years. And of course, the Supreme Court is the big kahuna in that, because we're going to see at least one, maybe even two or three different judicial nominees to the Supreme Court in the next 4 years, and that's something that is going to wind up being a major fight, I think, where the Democrats are really going to have to rally popular support to try and stop some of these nominees that are if they're too extreme. And we have heard from Bush that his favorite judges on the Supreme Court are Clarence Thomas and Antonia Scalia, which are the two most extreme justices on the Supreme Court. So we kind of know what's coming on that.
Right. Now, given that and the fact that the Democrats have actually used the filibuster in the last 4 years, particularly to block judicial appointments, we should also note, too, that there are plenty of moderate Republicans who are a little bit disgusted with the far right-wing swing of their party, who might also be open to voting no on some of these extreme appointments as well. Now, I want to take this just a couple of minutes to say that we could talk and talk and talk about all the negative things that will happen in the next 4 years with George Bush in office, but I want to talk about a couple of really positive things. One is that I have seen more people, just family members, friends, coworkers, people on the bus, people standing around on the street corners waiting for the lights to change, etc., who are talking about politics than I have seen in many, many, many years. And I think other folks have seen this too, that there are people who have never paid much attention to politics before who are getting interested and are getting, angry or wanting to do something. I think it's a major opportunity for people to start talking about politics with their friends and families and coworkers, et cetera, and getting them involved in issues that concern them.
Yeah, and presidential elections are pretty much the height of that. So now is really the time to have some of those conversations and to get people involved. We really are going to see the Democrats, you know, because they are by a small majority, but this is still true that they are the minority party when it comes to the White House, Congress, the Supreme Court, when it comes to state legislatures and governorships nationwide. They are not in as good a position as they would like to be to demand accountability out of the Bush administration. That largely is now our job. So the time is really now to start organizing, organizing, because there's a lot of good groups out there already, but to join them, to support them,
to get active. To figure out what it is that's important to you. Is it Social Security? Is it women's rights? Is it
the environment?
Preserving abortion? Is it the environment? Is it looking at our political system and trying to make change in our political system, whether that means trying to change the way we have structured democracy here in the United States, or whether that means looking at electoral reform, you know,
stopping an insane war,
yeah, instant runoff voting, whatever you think might work, not just for you, but to also be talking to your friends and family who are angry or sad or thinking that there has to be something else that can be done.
Right. I mean, a lot of people are you know, who got involved with the voting for the first time. I mean, we need to point out to them that democracy is a heck of a lot more than just voting. It's
getting people
every day.
Yeah, and I mean, if it means that you think participating and or supporting independent media is important as well, because I think this election really showed that you can get a lot of people out to the polls, but it doesn't mean much if those people are not well informed. So I think that's also very important. Now, the other thing that I want to talk about, too, just briefly, is that in the next 4 years, particularly in the next 2 years, with Republican majorities in the House and Senate, we're going to be having a lot of divisive issues coming up on the political scene here at home. And it's not just going to be Americans who are going to be, you know, taken up and absorbed by these issues. It's also going to be the Bush administration is going to be tied up fighting these battles in not just in Congress, but with the American people over these very divisive issues here at home. And also the Bush administration is going to have their hands full in Iraq as well. I think when you have an administration that, as Javis said, is very incompetent, tied up like that, it allows space elsewhere in the world for things to happen. Now, for example, if the Bush administration had not been involved in Iraq, I could guarantee you that Hugo Chavez would not be in power in Venezuela right now, and he still is. So I think if we look around the world, with the Bush administration busy here at home with its agenda that a good portion of the population, half the population, will be fighting, and tied up with an insane war in Iraq, that it's going to allow other good things to continue to happen around the world that a competent administration would have their heel on if they could.
Yeah, we've seen, for example, in South America, Uruguay recently became like the 10th or 11th country in South America to elect a leftist government. It's happening continent-wide in South America.
And it is happening on George W. Bush's watch, interesting.
Yeah, people are rejecting the Washington Consensus. They're rejecting neoliberalism. They're rejecting the heavy hand of the Bush administration. And, you know, as unpopular as the Bush administration is in the rest of the world, it allows, and as isolated as the Bush administration is making America in the rest of the world, it allows other bases of power to develop elsewhere in the world.
So people are organizing elsewhere. It's a good example for us here at home.
Yeah, and something we can learn from, because people elsewhere in the world are doing a lot of innovative and creative and really effective things in terms of grassroots democracy that we could be learning from and imitating.
All right, and finally, I just want to squeeze in there that I was not entirely surprised to see reports from Greg Palast and Tom Hartman and stuff with the discrepancies in the actual voting process that happened this time around. There's some serious stuff that had happened in Florida before. Looks like happened in Florida and places like Ohio and New Mexico, where minorities were taken off voter lists and, you know, problems with having enough machines in specific precincts, things like that. And yeah, I think that needs a lot more attention.
Yeah, you know, Palast is claiming that Kerry won in terms of the actual vote. And, you know, he's probably right, but it probably doesn't matter at this point. I mean, it really underscores once again that we need systematic reform. We need a way to have you know, a more uniform national system for electing our offices. And that's simply not going to happen because it's in the hand of the county and state administrators that probably are not going to agree with each other and undercut their own authorities.
Well, I would disagree that it doesn't matter. I think it matters a lot. I might not, you know, go back and
it's not
going to
change the outcome. That's what I meant.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think we need a serious focus on getting, for instance, companies like that produce our voting machines,
Diebold.
Like Diebold, that should be a citizen.
I noticed a lot of the problems had to do with the electronic voting this time around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not a good, since that's the new trend in voting, that's not a good thing.
So anyway, that's an issue we'll be focusing more here on Mind Over Matter. So, anything else on that?
Oh, I think that's enough.
All right.
Enough about the election.
Take us into international and this week in Iraq.
Yes, there's been a little bit of reporting about U.S. troops encircling Fallujah. And, of course, if you've been listening to this program, you'll know that the U.S. has been bombing the city of Fallujah almost every night for about the last month. They stepped up aerial bombardments this week that have driven about 80% of the population out of the city. It's a city of about 500,000 people. There's maybe about 100,000 people left inside the city. There have been skirmishes fought on the outskirts between insurgents and U.S. soldiers. U.S. troops have blockaded all access roads in and out of Fallujah, so no food is getting into the city anymore. That's been true for about the last 3 to 4 days. There are also no supplies in any of the hospitals, and the hospitals are already full of people who have been injured by the aerial bombing campaigns, the nightly aerial bombing campaigns. It's, in other words, it's been a rolling start for the fighting to take over Fallujah since about the middle of last week.
Yeah, and we should say also that the people left in Fallujah tend to be the poor and the people with the least resources.
Yeah.
That can't get out of the city.
And also, a lot of the people left in the city are men of fighting age who simply are not allowed to go out through U.S. checkpoints. It's a kind of separation that you can see the Israeli army doing in Palestine as well when they separate out young men from the rest of the population and arrest them and harass them, etc. It's the kind of thing that also makes it very hard for the families that are the portions of families that are allowed to leave the city, because it's very hard to find places in Iraq right now where people can stay away from home, particularly when the male adult members of their family are not with them. So many of those people are refugees and in desperate straits outside of the city of Fallujah because they've been driven from their homes. Now, meanwhile, the reason why the U.S. has encircled and has been bombing Fallujah is because Fallujah, so the Pentagon says and the Bush administration say, is the center of the insurgency. However, insurgent attacks are up by more than 30% for Ramadan for this whole month. So the siege of Fallujah is obviously having no effect in slowing down, much less stopping, the insurgency. Now, I can go into some of the attacks. I had thought about doing that if we had more time, but we don't. I'll just say that northern oil export has been closed down because of insurgent attacks. The domestic supply has also been hindered because of insurgent attacks this week and the week before, and that there have been numerous car bombings, including the car bombing of the education ministry in Baghdad this week, which happened on Tuesday. Now, not only is the siege of Fallujah not stopping the insurgency, it is actually fueling the insurgency. And one person who said that this week was UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, who sent a letter to George Bush, Tony Blair, and the Iraqi interim prime minister, Ayad Alawi, saying that if you attack Fallujah and destroy the city, you are going to make it very difficult, if not impossible, for elections to go forward in Iraq, because you will alienate all of the Sunni population.
Now, and the Sunni population has already said largely that we are not interested in participating in those elections.
Yeah, and Kofi Annan said, look, you have to use diplomacy. You have to find a political solution for the security situation in Iraq. You can't continue to kill people. That's not going to solve the problem. Now, he got a lot of flack for saying this. However, he is right. But both the interim government and the U.S. military have pretty much stopped the diplomatic negotiating that they had been undertaking with members of the tribal leaders in the city of Fallujah. And instead, the interim government was trying to use diplomacy abroad, Ayad Alawi had joined European Union leaders at a summit in Brussels this week, begging for more troops and more money for Iraq. It turns out the French president didn't even meet with Ayad Alawi. Although he did extend an invitation to the interim president, Ghazi al-Yawar, who is a Sunni, who is a member of the largest Sunni tribe in the nation of Iraq. And al-Yawar has also come out and openly condemned the siege and bombing of Fallujah. So I find that kind of interesting that the French president is sort of taking sides here in this situation. And the rest of the European Union, nobody sent or put together more new a promise for more new troops for Iraq.
And bear in mind that the French president Chirac he's conservative.
He's not a liberal guy.
He's supposed to be an ally of Bush in all this. And once again, he's taking very much an opposite stance.
Right. And in fact, not only did none of the European Union countries come forward with more troops, three of them in the past couple of weeks have announced withdrawals and planned withdrawals of troops from the coalition. Poland said it's going to scale down its troop commitment in Iraq starting early next year. Well, the beginning of next year is less than 2 months away, so that's very soon.
And the time of the elections.
Right. And Bulgaria said on Wednesday that it would cut its presence in Iraq by over 10% starting next month. Hungary said that they will be withdrawing their troops by the end of March, and that's just under 5 months from now. So as you can see, the coalition is really starting to unravel. Well, actually, it's been unraveling for a while, but they're pretty desperate to get more troops in, and that's not likely now.
Yeah, and it begs the question of where the troops from the U.S. are going to come. You can only get so many troops by having stop-loss programs.
That's right. And in fact, there was a legal challenge to the stop-loss program. I don't know if it's been successful or not, and there are going to be a few more people trying to challenge that in court, saying, look, I've fulfilled the terms of my agreement. This is a draft, and this is just not above board. That's going to be a problem in the future as well. So that's it for this week in Iraq.
All right. Just a couple minutes left. Any events today? Isn't there an event happening, Westlake?
Yes, yeah. there's a protest for people who are upset with the election on Tuesday. There's Not in Our Name and others are having an anti-war march and rally that starts at 1, is that correct, at Westlake?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. You could go down there at noon and hang out and start talking to people about what can be done.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yes, sir. Proposing some solutions.
Instead of just yelling about how angry you are, it's good to start talking about what can you do.
Although there will be plenty of people just yelling about how angry they are, too.
And that's good, too. It's good to work some of that stuff out as well.
Well, I think it's good, too, to always, of course, focus on listening to others, listening to what people are really saying.
Yeah.
Listening to what people who voted one way or the other.
And, it's also good, too, to be down there with a sign and have people who are just down there shopping or hanging out walk up to you and start talking about stuff. It's good to hear from, people who are just downtown hanging out for the day, how they feel about these issues.
Mm-hmm. All right. So talking once again with John Parrish and Maria Tomchik, co-editors at Eat the State, and tell people where the heck they can find Eat the State.
Eat the State can be found in bookstores, coffee shops, cafes, and around town and various places where you pick up free publications. We can be found online at www.eatthestate.org. And if you have questions, comments, tips, you want to volunteer, you like what we talk about and want to give us encouragement, or you think we ought to cover something that we haven't before, you can give us a call at our message line at 206-903-9461.
All right, and you guys are always looking for volunteers as well?
Always.
Yes, and we'll be starting our winter fundraising drive soon. So if folks are looking for places to donate right now because you're angry because of the elections, we're a good candidate for that.
Yeah, talking about alternative media and supporting progressive voices in the community. That's what we are.
So, but if they're looking for some place for a tax-deductible donation at the end of the year, they can start.
Yeah, they can do that, too.
They can do that, too.